It's time for Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Well, folks, it's time for another edition of Valley Edition. And today, it's my great pleasure to welcome on the phone none other than Philip Manning, news director at KTNA in Talkeetna. Welcome, Philip.
Pleasure to be here, Mike.
We're going to be talking about two topics. The first one, because it has had an incredible impact both within the borough and in the borough in terms of residents' use of IT services. And I'm talking about what was announced on Wednesday as a computer virus that not only was here in the Valley, but of course has been around the nation as well. Philip, have you covered that from the perspective of Talkeetna and the impact it's had on residents there?
We have covered it as far as specific impacts. I mean, the folks here trying to access some of the web services of the borough are going to have the same issues as elsewhere. Outside of that, the public libraries here in Willow, Talkeetna, and Trapper Creek have had to go to manually checking out books again. And obviously that takes a little bit more time. It's a little bit more old school. But other than that, I think the web services are going to be the biggest impact on a lot of folks here, people trying to get into e-commerce, My Property, that sort of stuff, which as of Friday morning is still offline, is my understanding.
Right. I had a communication. I had a chance to talk with Patty Sullivan of the borough, and she made a number of comments that are covered in part in the release that's available on the borough's website. You can go there, Mat-Su.gov, and take a look at the description. But her point was that this was something that, number one, was being confronted by not only the internal IT department of the borough, but also there's been an involvement of the FBI, as well as, it turns out, many other IT services that are in the area that have lent their expertise to coming up with solutions. I did also talk with people who work at various places around the borough. And the central landfill is kind of an interesting one because as you walk through and you say, okay, if you're a big truck that has arrived there and you pull up and you're being weighed, one of the things that has happened in the past is the calculation of the volume and weight of that truck, which is going to lead to the price you're going to pay for delivering to the landfill, is all done by computer.
Right.
And so although they have said that, and here the other thing for listeners to understand, I think, is that when we're talking about the IT services being disrupted, this isn't just one server. That many of the services provided by the borough, the credit card information and use, for example, is separate, are in different places. So you could go to the landfill, there'll be someone there, but it's going to be a slow process because they're going to have to, one, bring in enough paper and receipt books and even pens to write all this up and do the calculation that would result in an accurate bill being provided. I thought that was one of the most instructive things of reminding us how we have subtly become users of all kinds of technology where we don't have to do 2 + 2 = 4 very much anymore.
Sure. Well, and you know, everybody carries around pretty sophisticated calculators in their pockets these days. Yeah, the central landfill thing was interesting because it's one of the few places I saw where they are still able to process credit cards as well. Pretty much anywhere else, libraries, animal care, anything like that, they're asking people telling people they can only take cash or check essentially. And I don't know what the difference is at the central landfill if they've got some of those old school credit card runners. When I worked retail, we used to call them knuckle busters.
Right.
Maybe they've got that going, but they have advised folks that if they are going down to the central landfill, that to expect some delays because that manual process takes a great deal more time than the computerized one that folks are probably used to.
So my impression at the present time is that this is one of those things where you have pretty much all hands on deck, and whatever has been your daily pattern of work and in any of these borough offices, you're faced with saying, okay, we're awake now.
Right.
And we have to figure some things out.
Right.
And that's that means creative problem solving of how to get the job done. I know the libraries, borough libraries, are still open. They're still doing what the libraries do, but it just means that in order to do the records and so on, it's become a manual activity.
Right. Well, and once the computers come back up, my guess is that all that material is then going to have to be done over, you know, or at least transcribed into the digital system. And, I saw a picture, and I think it was in the statement that Patty Sullivan put out earlier this week, yesterday, I think it was, or late Wednesday maybe, that they've actually busted out typewriters at borough offices, which it's a little impressive that they even still had typewriters in storage, but I guess it turns out it was a good thing.
Yes. Do you remember typewriters?
I do. I am just old enough to have used typewriters.
I have had, I can quite well remember the first typewriter that I bought, and I took it to a university with me. And the sound of those keys and all the rest of it. But right now, I would be hard-pressed to find a typewriter. Well, certainly not in our home, not at the office.
Right.
So does KTNA have a typewriter somewhere?
You know, I don't think we do. We do keep around some archaic technology. We keep around all sorts of media players, that sort of thing. We still have a reel-to-reel. And we still have an old corded phone in case the power goes out and our fancy phones don't work anymore. We can still plug one of those in. So we do still keep some old technology around for the sake of preserving old recorded material and, you know, in case of emergency communication, that sort of thing.
Right. And now that you've mentioned phones, it's important to understand that one of the reasons why the borough's phone system would be interrupted is that they made a transition to having an IP-based phone system, which is essentially a computer-based phone system rather than analog systems. And that's
not uncommon now.
Right. We have looked at that here, but fortunately, if you will, we still have two analog lines coming in. So even if we were disrupted by something similar, we, of course, could still use the analog lines. And one other comment that's been made is that the other level of use of computers is the personal on your desk, what are you looking at computer. And my understanding is that the borough has a variety of different platforms. There are a few offices that have Apple computers. And in terms of work right there, they are less likely, although still potentially subjected to some virus work, they are less likely to become infected.
Yeah, and that's been the case for a while, I think. At least I remember back when I was more into the tech world, that was one of the selling points of Apple products, is that they're not susceptible in the same way to the same viruses as PCs are. Now, I don't know if that landscape has shifted somewhat now that the popularity of Apple computers has risen significantly over the past decade or so. But it may just be that in this case, that particular virus doesn't target Macs as well as it does the Windows operating system.
Right. Okay, what we're going to be doing here is interviewing here down at Radio Free Palmer, Eric Wyatt, on Monday morning. We thought we'd give him the weekend and let him be able to
wish him the best of luck,
recover a little bit, and then he would be able to summarize and give some of those answers to questions like what really happened and how are they working to prevent it from happening again.
Right. What was the vector and where did it come from?
Yeah. One last question for you. I'm curious, did this affect you personally in any way?
In my personal life, no. My work life, a little bit, because it's I not infrequently access a lot of the borough's online stuff. Now, their main website is still up.
Right.
So you can still get to things there, but with everybody's computers down, they're not exactly able to update it. And so, you know, they had been keeping up with the slate of borough candidates, and we're talking on Friday. The filing period for borough office ends today, so I've been keep checking to see if maybe that list has been updated. It hasn't been updated in about a week now, but
right.
And for the last few days, that's pretty understandable. So as far as that goes, it's affected work a little bit, and just in the lack of ability to get the kind of information that I think my listeners would want to hear.
Okay. Well, what I'm going to do then is shift, and it's a natural segue from what you've just said, to a kind of a related concern regarding the whole issue of elections. I'd start, number one, we've had communication with the City of Palmer's clerk, and I know the borough clerk has been working on this as well. In order to, they have put out a call. They were in a situation where they were not seeing really the number of poll workers that they have typically had in the past. Fortunately, the City of Palmer, last meeting I attended on Tuesday, the clerk announced they had filled out their needs, but they were looking at initially about 40 new poll workers. And are you aware of the poll workers' situation in Talkeetna?
Not specifically. I do know that there is a handful of dedicated folks who seems like are there every single election. I haven't spoken with any of them to see if they're going to be coming back. But yeah, it does seem like I see very familiar faces every time I go in to vote, be it for state, borough, any given election.
Well, that seems to have been the case to this point. And now what's happened, in fact, I think there was mentioned that in the list of people, there were 3 death notices recently mm-hmm. of people who have typically been involved in the process. And then a number of other people that have just simply retired or finished up their time. So in any case, that seems to be handled. So the good news is when people go to wherever they go to do their voting, there should be, if not a familiar face, someone there to handle the things appropriately. Which leads me to the next aspect. I have been able to go to a Palmer Chamber meeting this past Wednesday, and there was a Republican primary forum of the 2 major candidates, the incumbent Delana Johnson, serving in the House, State House, and a challenger, Edna DeVries, who's presently mayor of the City of Palmer. And they spoke there, so I had an opportunity to listen, because we'll be, as you are, moving on with some interviews of people who are on the ballot in our areas. I was wondering if you were having also some forums for candidates that are serving the Talkeetna area.
We are looking into that as we head forward. For the primaries, what we're doing is we have our public affairs show, Sioux Valley Voice, which used to air on Wednesdays, but due to some scheduling changes, we're moving that to Thursdays now. And we do have a couple of interviews scheduled with the Republicans running for Senate seat E, that being current appointed Senator Mike Schauer and current District 7 Assemblymember Randall Kowalki. And they are going to be appearing on the show on August 9th and August 16th, respectively.
Okay. And are there any forums sponsored by any other groups in that area that you're aware of?
Not yet in this area. I've been in contact with the folks at the AARP, and of course they have a candidates forum. But my understanding is they're still kind of figuring out what that's going to look like going forward later this year. And then once the primaries are over, then it's possible that there might be something happening as well.
Okay, well, let's step up to the next, if you will, level of candidates. What I'm aware of, there's been considerable news or discussion about money, and I'm talking about money and the governor's race.
Sure.
Because of the somewhat complicated situation where we have both a Republican and a Democratic primary, and then we have an incumbent governor who is planning to run, but outside of the primary system, using a similar tactic that he used previously to win the governorship. And I noticed that people have been going to AIPAC reports, checking the amounts of money that these candidates have been bringing in, and there's considerable sums that each one of the leading candidates, and here I would refer to Dunleavy, Begich, and Treadwell. They all three seem to be bringing in money, and I also notice that they're beginning to have significant numbers of fundraisers scattered about the area. What, if anything, have you seeing of these three candidates' presence, either with offices, visits, et cetera, in Talkeetna?
I haven't seen any of them up in this area yet. I have been contacted by a couple of campaigns regarding setting up interviews. I had an interview with Mike Dunleavy on Sioux Valley Voice a few weeks ago, in fact. And have been contacted by Mark Begich's campaign as well. No in-person visits yet, though I hear that might be changing in the near future for at least one of the candidates. And the fundraising question is an interesting one because there's been a decent amount of mudslinging going around. You know, you're having the Dunleavy campaign accusing the Walker campaign of being influenced by money from outside interests. And, of course, Mike Dunleavy's campaign's single largest contributor by a long shot is his own brother. Haven't heard quite as much of that headed in Mark Begich's direction, at least I haven't. But then again, he's only really just started to ramp up his campaign activities in the last couple of weeks. So, you know, the money is always going to be an interesting factor, and especially in a three-way race like this with three people who have a decent amount of name recognition. I would argue that, you know, Dunleavy probably has the least outside of this area. In this area, he's got plenty, but statewide, probably a little bit less name recognition, so maybe it's a little bit more important to get those ads out there and to get his name in front of people.
Right, right. Well, let's shift a little bit then to, of course, a race which so far has received, I think, a small amount of attention, and that's for the borough mayor. We know that the incumbent, Vern Halter, is running.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had any bubbling of discussion about that at all in Talkeetna?
Not so. I've heard rumors that there might be so-and-so might be filing, but without being able to check the borough updated
yes.
site, it's difficult to say. And on APOC, on the Alaska Public Offices Commission website, he is currently the only person who has filed a registration form with APOC. Now, there are lots of letters of intent, some of which might be for borough mayor, but they don't have to specify on the letter of intent, only when they actually register with APOC. So as of, I just refreshed it as we've been talking, and as of right now, Friday morning, Vern Halter is the only one listed on the state website.
So that leaves the assembly district that Mr. Kowalki occupies.
Correct.
Since he's going, trying to step up to the House. What do you see happening in that race?
The Senate, but yeah, so as of, again, today, looking at APOC, there are two folks who have filed as candidates for the Matsu Borough Assembly who live in Willow, which is District 7, and that is one of which just happened a couple days ago, and that is Dennis Dees, and then a candidate who's filed mid-last month, and I don't know if it's Tamara or Tamara Bovee. Both of whom live in Willow, so presumably then running for the District 7 seat. So there will be at least two choices for the folks in this area come October, and maybe more. We'll see what happens after filing closes today.
I seem to remember Tamara, and the name Bovee is associated, I believe, with her dad as well. But in any case, we'll have to seek out more information about that particular race. I know that locally here, just to give a little due to the Palmer situation, it's a very complicated, relatively speaking, race because the city has essentially three seats open, one for 2 years, and that's one presently held by Linda Combs, who was appointed to the seat when her predecessor Brad Hansen took a job with the city. And then we have the normal set of two seats coming up, presently held by Richard Best and Pete LaFrance. As of Tuesday, there were only three people who had completed the petition process for those seats, and those were the three incumbents. I have no information yet. Of course, again, Friday at the end of business, or just before the end of business at the City Hall, that will be determined whether they're going to have an easy time this go-round or whether there'll be competition for those three seats. The further complication is that when you vote, you'll get to vote twice for City Council, one for the two-year seat and for two, no more than two candidates for the three-year seats. And then, just to put a little bit on top of that, we have, of course, the mayor, Edna DeVries, running for the seat presently held by Delaney Johnson in Alaska House. That leaves the potential, if she were to win, for her seat to come open, because she still has another year, and then there would be an appointment, I'm guessing, in October to fill her seat before an election to fill out the remaining part of it. So it's possible for the city of Palmer to see as many as four new faces up there.
Wow.
And I have to go through and say this. I appreciate your patience for listening, because I just have to remind myself of just what how complicated it is, because I realize that most voters don't follow that closely enough. Well, let's leave the campaign trail, and let's leave the IT problems. And since we have you on the line here, touch on any issues that are particularly being dealt with there in Talkeetna before we finish up.
Well, you know, we're kind of maybe possibly hit the peak of summer season at this point. We're, you know, about at the halfway through mark for the season, and it seems every year like the season it gets longer and longer, and the shoulder seasons get shorter and shorter. And so, you know, there's been some ongoing work on some of the roads and infrastructure up here. The state was just up here doing some crack sealing and other things on the Talkeetna Spur Road. But kind of an ongoing issue, aside from the sewer and water system, which I think I bring up every time I'm on the show, but it's
sure.
Always near the front of my brain, it seems like. But things like the impact of the number of tourists we get on dust and other things in the area. You know, there's a street here called Woodpecker, which is a secondary drop-off point along the Alaska Railroad for some of the tour companies. But
right.
It's also a residential neighborhood. And so you get a significant number of tour buses coming through there on especially, you know, twice a week or so whenever they have their big drop-off days. And that creates a lot of dust. And a lot of the residents around there aren't big fans of the presence of those buses. And in years past, and possibly this year, I can't recall if they did it this year, but they would spread calcium chloride, do some dust control, that sort of thing. Well, there's, you know, some effort by some of the local folks, local RSA, that to get that road potentially paved when the next road bond package comes around, which could be in the near future. So there's some discussion about that. In addition, the sales tax, the repeal effort for that, since we are just about at the deadline, I was planning on checking in with those folks today to see how they were doing on signatures. Getting nearly 3,000 signatures in this area was going to be a really heavy lift, but I know they got some help from other folks. So it's entirely possible that they were able to, you know, to get a decent amount of signatures. So we'll find out if that's going to be on the ballot. And if it is, even though it's very downtown and East Talkeetna specific, the entire borough is going to get to vote on it.
Oh, wow.
Because of some Supreme Court precedents that I had to have the borough attorney explain to me.
Well, that's a very significant thing. I know I followed some kinds of votes, particularly in the Anchorage area, where for years both the Hillside and the Girdwood area would have issues that they would have on the ballot, but the entire Anchorage bowl essentially voted on them. And it seemed to me that I can understand, I guess, the thought process there that if everyone is going to pay something, then everybody should vote. Is that true in Talkeetna? Is everybody paying, and is that the rationale for voting?
The rationale for voting has to do with, and the name is escaping me right now, the Supreme Court case, but that if there's a potential interest by voters elsewhere than in the area being affected, that that everybody gets to vote. And it actually goes back to another sales tax issue in the Kenai, and it had to do with city taxation versus borough taxation. And like I said, the details are escaping me, but it was also a sales tax issue in that instance. And I believe the Chase Comprehensive Plan up in this area actually kind of ended up being part of the same precedent as well, that even though it was written for and by the folks in Chase, that because that's, you know, there's a recreational corridor up there and the railroad runs through there, that there was a potential interest for everyone in the borough.
Oh, wow.
And then it also came up with the vote to ban commercial cannabis in the borough. If you'll recall, residents of all three cities, or citizens of all three cities, got to vote, even though they had already voted individually for their cities. They got to vote in the area-wide election as well. And that was the reasoning was the same there.
Well, thank you. Thank you for laying that out. One last question. I just noted that there's some changes in the subsistence fishing down in Kenai. What's happening in the Talkeetna? You've got the Great River and so on.
Sure.
Any changes, one, in regulation, and two, in productivity?
Regulation, no change from the beginning of the season that I'm aware of. Kings got shut down basically from the get-go up here, and I've heard that fishing has not been excellent in areas that are easy to reach. I know that folks have gone a little bit further off the beaten path, and nobody's told me exactly where they've gone. But some folks are finding success now that the silvers are starting to show up. But I guess these were reds. But, king season was pretty dismal. But last year we had a very strong silver run, so hopefully that trend will continue.
Okay. Well, thank you, Philip Manning from KTNA, for sharing Valley Edition today.
My pleasure.
And we'll be back next week for another edition.
You've been listening to Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Matsu Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky. Valley Edition is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of hosts or guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.